Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, November 30th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Tealium. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's episode is all about the retailer's Q3 checkup. Joining me for today's episode, we have our principal analyst who heads up our retail practice, Susie David Canyon. Hey, Susie.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And we also have Blake Droch, who's one of our analysts on the same team. Welcome, Blake.
Hey, Sarah. Good to be here.
Welcome back from Thanksgiving, both of you.
Thanks.
Let's get started with our first segment today, which is news and reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline is a November 26 story from Insider Intelligence titled Black Friday Sales Rise 12% Year Over Year. Our colleague and friend of the pod, Zach Stambor, reported this stat from MasterCard Spending Pulse, though Zach noted Adobe Analytics reported a smaller 2.3% spending increase. Zach wrote that spend was bolstered by discounts and that much of the increase came from inflation. So, Susie, your review of Zach's headline in 60 seconds is?
It's awkward to review colleagues' headlines, but I will. And I think it's, again, it's like everything else. It's so mixed. The headline is eye-grabbing, up 12%, but then there are lots of mixed reviews about really how high were the sales. The good news is that they weren't down, so there was some positive momentum, although as we've noted many times over, with inflation being so high, if you looked at unit sales, did it really increase? Probably not. That said, I do think that there were some strong gains for some specific retailers that really have these must-have items versus nice-to-have. And of course, we know that luxury is and will continue to do well.
Blake, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is?
So yeah, I think, you know, we do need to frame the context here that this article Zach wrote the day after Black Friday. We're recording this on Cyber Monday and it's going to come out on Wednesday. And we're going to know a lot more sort of looking back on it than sort of the pieces that we have now. But I think it's tough to make much from this, considering that, you know, inflation still plays a role, even when you're factoring discounts. MasterCard's numbers seem to indicate that in-store sales did okay, considering that it's also building upon last year really big growth, where we had in-store sales up 16.5% for the entire holiday season. So what we saw here for in-store Black Friday is indicative of a pretty good growth on top of that. And for e-commerce, that 14% on Black Friday would be even more promising, considering that Cyber Monday is set to be an even bigger driver of online sales. And then real quick on the category level, it's certainly not surprising to see consumer electronics have strong sales, as Black Friday has always, you know, done well in that category. But it definitely marks a shift from the previous 2022 sales events that we saw, like Prime Day, where shoppers appeared to reach for more necessities over indulgences like home goods and groceries. So I think overall, if I had to make a prediction based on this little sliver of results, I think that what we're going to see this year in terms of shopping behavior might be a little bit more similar to recent non-pandemic years than we are anticipating because of inflation and everything else is going on. So basically, I'd say, you know, similar shopping behavior, but muted in terms of purchase volume.
I agree, although I would add that it's probably even more spread out than in the past. Like Blake is saying, you know, this is one day, it's Cyber 5, it's 5 days, but there are so many other days. And people started shopping as early as October this year, which is a little bit different than pre-pandemic. And I think that some of the tried and true categories pre-pandemic, like beauty also is another big one, and fragrance especially, will continue to do well post, can we call it post-pandemic? This year, even through inflation.
Now it's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is the retailer's Q3 checkup, where we'll be talking about some of the must-discuss companies and what interests us the most about their performance. Let's start off with a little-known company called Amazon. Amazon's online store sales, which make up about 40% of their revenues, were up 7% in Q3. That's the first positive growth in four quarters for Amazon's online store sales. Susie, I'm going to start with you. What interests you most about Amazon at the moment and why?
So we were just talking about October, or I was just mentioning how sales for the holidays have jumped into October. And that really started with Amazon's newest event that they did in October. And there were so many high hopes pinned on that event. And in fact, according to Numerator, which tracked at the time over 44,000 orders during the sale, they clocked in that the average sale was $13 less than in July. So we are seeing that the fears of inflation are, and economic pressures in general, are really starting to hammer in on the consumer. They're spending less time buying random things, and it's much more targeted purchases. And even Amazon, where people go buy all kinds of things, is starting to feel that effect. So I think for me, one of the things I'm keeping an eye on about Amazon is what will happen really post-holiday into the returns period of January, and where will they net out?
Yeah, I'm excited to hopefully talk returns with you guys down the road. Blake, what interests you about Amazon at the moment and why?
I'm definitely going to be most interested in seeing how the headwinds in other areas of the business are going to impact what they're doing with retail. So I think, you know, some of the biggest headline with Amazon over the last couple of weeks has been the fact that they're pulling back in several areas, retail among them, but also things like the voice Alexa and the voice driven products. And then, of course, there are going to be, you know, headwinds just because of the economic situation with AWS, which is another, you know, big driver. And I wonder if that's just going to maybe not force Amazon, but sway maybe some more efficiency driving in the retail business. It is, you know, very much sort of not their most profitable, but is their bread and butter as a, you know, a business. And they are actually positioned to weather a time where consumers are pulling back. Just because situations are going to get tough economically doesn't mean that consumers aren't going to, you know, shop online. They're still going to if they can find those deals. And Amazon is the place for many consumers to look for affordable products online. And especially as you see things like the, you know, personal care and beauty increase overall in e-commerce, I think Amazon is in a good position, if they really focus on the efficiency of their retail business, to drive more profits from that area.
Yeah, we also have third-party seller services, which make up about 23% of Amazon's business, up 18% in Q3, which is the same as last Q3. So that's a strong look for Amazon. Moving along to Walmart. Walmart's grocery business buoyed its Q3 earnings and revenues, which surpassed Wall Street's expectations. That's according to Melissa Repko of CNBC. She writes that sales were up nearly 9% in Q3 as Americans across income levels bought the company's low-priced groceries. The retail giant also pointed to a strong back-to-school season in the U.S. Blake, what interests you most about Walmart at the moment and why?
I think, you know, this is really a time where Walmart can show basically how resilient it can be based on just how diverse and, you know, generally applicable their business model is to any consumer. A thing like, you know, a grocery is very flexible. And in terms of inflation, when people of all income brackets are looking to save, Walmart is just a very, very logical solution. Basically, you know, plain and simple, there's some data earlier this year that came out from payments that showed that nearly two-thirds of U.S. consumers had made an in-store purchase from Walmart in the past month. I mean, that's huge. And then Walmart always touts that 90% of Americans live within 10 miles of a Walmart location. So it's not just something that is specifically geared towards their own demographic of consumers in terms of what they can offer. And it's really easy for someone who might be looking to save to switch down to Walmart, which is not necessarily the same case for other verticals outside of grocery. So I think that, you know, once again, it's just, it's bread and butter is going to prove to be very resilient over, you know, the next coming year. And it's going to be interesting, I think, later in the podcast as we discuss other retailers, how that model of what Walmart is doing isn't necessarily applicable in other areas like electronics or apparel.
Yeah, even that 90% stat, it's interesting, but it's pretty niche, right? Like, I definitely live within 10 miles of a Walmart. I live in New York City, but it's not walkable and it's not easily accessible on a train. So that doesn't really mean much for me. That said, this is purely anecdotal, but I feel like Walmart tends to have bus stops around it in different areas. So maybe it doesn't really make a difference, like car ownership, for example.
I also think that stat is in terms of distribution. So you might not be close to one, but 90% has the access from a delivery perspective as well.
That is definitely true for living in New York City.
I think that stat, though, is they live 10 miles in a physical Walmart location.
Yeah, but since they use stores as distribution points, I think it just makes it that, like, whether you can get to one or not,
it's a moot point.
Maybe, because they'll deliver to you, versus if you live whatever I don't know what the exact, you know, circumference radius for delivery is. But if you live too far, then you're not going to get perishables delivered to you.
So another all-star of Q3, I don't know if you could call it that, another company that performed decently was the Home Depot, which reported net sales growth of nearly 6% year over year. That's close to $40 billion in net sales. Global Data Retail Managing Director Neil Saunders said being able to make gains during the exceptional period of the pandemic is to be expected. Being able to make those gains as things normalize is excellent. Being able to extend those gains in the post-COVID period is exceptional. Home Depot has done all three. Saunders is using the term post-COVID period. Susie, thoughts on the Home Depot? What's interesting right now?
So for me, I think there are three things that I would highlight. They are using mobile experiences, both in terms of blending what's happening in-store and online. So apparently 50% of their online sales were fulfilled in-store. So you could assume that that has to do with the mobile experience. But it's not just for the consumer. It's also for the salespeople. They're putting in place different technology to enable, you know, easier out of stock and fulfilling shelves. So I think mobile experience is one. I'm also fascinated by how they're really staying abreast of and in tune with what's happening. So as mortgage rates increase, people are less likely to buy, and we know home buying is at an all-time low. People are less likely to buy homes. So we're back to the do-it-yourself trends and or home improvement trends. So they're really capitalizing on that. And the third thing, which I find really nice in some ways, is that they have a pro program, which obviously is good for them, right? If you have contractors as part of your consumer shopping base, they typically have larger basket size. They typically have more than one job, more than one house. So they're coming back to you over and over again. So they have that in place, which I think, and they have a different loyalty program for them altogether. So that obviously is going to help a different revenue stream. But now they have some sort of job matching program to try and help workers unite with contractors, which I think is really lovely. So I think they've really hit it on the nail in many ways.
Hitting the nail on the head?
Yeah. I couldn't remember. Everybody knows how my ability for these sayings is so poor. And I really wanted a home improvement one with the nail,
exactly,
but I missed it. I totally, totally missed it.
Measure those sayings twice. Cut once. Let's keep moving for the sake of time. Let's move on to our penultimate retailer we're talking about this first half, which is Target. Target posted a much weaker Q3 than analysts expected, and they lowered its full-year profit outlook, sending Target stock plunging 15%, according to Forbes. Target chairman and CEO Brian Cornell said consumers had reined in their spending as feared toward the end of October and early November as shoppers dealt with stubborn inflation. Blake, what is most interesting to you about Target in this moment?
Well, I did have a pun about Target missing the mark, but based on these last attempts, I think I'm just going to pan that. It's really interesting to look at Walmart and compare it to Target, right? Because on a surface level, they're both big box retailers, generally, you know, the same types of consumer behavior. But what they did on the back end in terms of, you know, missing the mark on selling discretionary goods is something that Walmart maybe, you know, was experiencing as well. I would imagine that they were, but was able to compensate from that based on a booming grocery business, and Target, it doesn't seem like they were able to sort of compensate for the misses that they had on things like electronics. But I will say that going forward, I am still very interested in what Target can do, especially on the e-commerce front. And I think that this recent announcement of building these larger Target stores, which are not, they are basically to enhance the in-store experience as well. But if you read that press release, it's really about servicing the online shopper. And they've made a bunch of strategic acquisitions over the years to really optimize this ship from store model. And as the competition over delivery speed increases, what you have is, you know, delivery speeds get faster, but the inventory available, you know, for online shopping drops. But as they sort of perfect this model of ship from store, I think that they can become more competitive in these essential goods spaces, which they're kind of missing right now. And that's been reflected on their earnings. So I think that what we saw in the latest earnings report is almost expected, but I think it's something that they're working on, but it's not necessarily showing that they, you know, are not making progress. I think these are just long-term investments that they're making to really become much more efficient in that grocery essentials in those areas for both in-store and online. And it'll be interesting to see what they do over the next couple of years.
So would you say that you're not concerned about Target long term?
No, I'm actually not concerned about it. I'm really interested in what Target can do. I think there's a lot of potential.
Cool. All right. I would say you're right on Target. I'm right on Target. All right. Last retailer for our first half, it's Macy's. So another Forbes article noted that Macy's falling revenues were not as bad as investors feared. That led to a spike in Macy's stock price. Investors are now wondering if the company can beat future projections of stagnating sales growth. Susie, I have two questions for you. One, what do you think is most interesting with Macy's in this moment? And two, did you watch the parade?
Yes, I absolutely did. I made everybody stop what they were doing to watch. I was in love with the balloons. I've been to so many of the parades in real life, both in like in the stands, on the route, actually in the building, watching through the window. There is nothing more magical than Thanksgiving Day parade. I think it's amazing. What I'm interested in, and again, it's like three things that I find great about Macy's right now. They're sticking to their Polaris strategy. Times have changed. They have changed the course a little bit, but the foundation of their strategy has not changed. And I think that'll help them win over time versus constantly reacting and changing their base strategy. That said, I do think that they are reacting well. So the second thing is that they're working very hard with both data and people looking at sales numbers to try and understand what are people buying, what brands are people buying, how are they shopping, and really controlling their inventory to a level that has helped them be a little bit more profitable than some of their competitors. The third thing is that they have multiple brands under the Macy's Inc. banner, so they aren't seeing the same sort of sales levels across the banners, and that's helping the company sort of weather the storm because they have different brands. So Bloomingdale's did okay. They were up. Bluemercury, which is high-end beauty, did really well, up 14%. Macy's itself was not so great and they had soft sales, so bringing the whole chain down. But I do think over time that'll normalize and they'll figure it out. And they might do some nifty cool things like right-size stores. You know, they've been launching different banners like the Marketplace, which is a smaller store, more localized, like Target. They're using some stores as distribution points. So I do think that they will figure out the Macy's brand, but the other brands are doing quite well right now.
So Susie is ho-ho hopeful for Macy's.
100%.
Would you believe I didn't write these ahead of time? We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to rank some retailers based on how we think they're doing right now. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Tealium. Today's consumers not only expect amazing personalized experiences, they also expect brands to respect their preferences and protect their privacy. That's why retail brands like New Balance and Rakuten are using Tealium's customer data platform to build personalized, omnichannel shopping experiences that never go out of style with trusted customer data. Learn more on how a CDP can help you balance privacy and personalization by visiting Tealium.com/industry-retail. Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, earnings awards edition, where we take a look at the two best and two most concerning retailer performances as of late, and we give them awards. So let's start with the most impressive. Susie, what is your Q3 award for most impressive retailer?
Mine is for Neiman Marcus Group, which I don't know if you all knew that they have Neiman Marcus, which they have around 30-something stores. They have Bergdorf Goodman in New York City, and they also have Neiman Marcus Last Call. Not a ton of stores, but what I found really impressive, they have some amazing stats. 80% of their sales were at full price. So we have been talking about how luxury is really winning in these difficult times, but here is another example. 70% of their stores had their highest revenue in 10 years, and they're saying how this, I found crazy, 2% of their customers drive 40% of their sales. So that's huge. And their top customers are in the 1 million plus net worth. So they are doing amazing things in terms of keeping that customer coming back. Apparently, they see folks coming in 25 times a year, some of their best customers, which is absurdly high. And they've also found that shoppers who are shopping both online and in-store are spending way more, 5 times more than shoppers who only shop in one channel. These are all things we kind of already knew, but they are doing an excellent job at retaining those customers and having them keep coming back with fresh new things. Plus, they're starting to buy companies to try and help with data and curation and content. They purchased Stylize at the beginning of their fiscal year, and I think that's really helping them with their customer journey. I could keep going on and on, but I feel like Neiman Marcus, super big win.
I think you're right. I went into Neiman Marcus on Black Friday. It was my first time ever going into a store on Black Friday, which is either embarrassing or something to be proud of, depending on how you look at it. And they had amazing sales, like 50% off, 80% off, and I still couldn't afford anything in there. So it was a good shopping experience. I didn't buy anything, but I definitely see what you're coming from with it being a really strong performer for high net worth individuals. Blake, your Q3 award for most impressive retailer goes to...
I'm giving it to Best Buy, and not because they had this fantastic quarter. They basically performed, better than what was expected. But I think it's kind of like a masterclass in not only managing expectations, but also like doing what you can in when times are just going to be inevitably tough. Because Best Buy just operates in this category where they were destined to have a really tough year based on the fact that everyone bought so many new electronics during the pandemic. Electronics are, high-priced items that people only buy once every few years and for a lot of the big ticket items. And then on top of that, not only did consumers front load these big ticket items during the pandemic, you shift right into a time where inflation is basically, pushing out the, middle income consumer, and that's just dropping the demand overall. I thought there were some really, interesting things that were reported from these earnings. They did, cut staff and inventory was reduced. Not necessarily, actually, they did say specifically that inventory was reduced just based off of 2021 when they had purchased a lot in order to meet the demand. But a few months ago, when they reported their Q2 earnings, there was sort of this glimmer of hope that they were doing better than what other retailers were able to do in terms of like keeping inventory down and just reducing the operating costs a little bit. And even though they didn't really mention that specifically in Q3, I think it's sort of maybe the story behind the scenes is that they notice that this year ahead is going to be really tough, and they did the best that they can to sort of, you know, cut down on their operating costs in order to glean a little bit of positivity out of this. And the last thing I'll say is that they noticed that, of course, lower income consumers have opted for, you know, less expensive TVs and other electronics, whereas wealthier consumers are actually picking premium products and trading up. So I think when we talk about the way that the middle is sort of hollowing out in terms of luxury doing really well, and then, you know, Walmart on the sort of the other end, people looking to save do really well, there are opportunities for a single business to actually service the higher income and that sort type of behavior, as well as either making up for or having an offering for lower income consumers. So they're still buying, but maybe not. Maybe they're scaling down a little bit. And I think that it's really tough in consumer electronics to do so, especially in this environment. So even though their earnings were kind of just like, okay, I think during these times is actually maybe more impressive than we're giving credit for, or they're given credit for. Or maybe, like I said, they've just fooled me because they've managed expectations so well.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that that's an excellent point about Best Buy being able to reach their higher income and lower income customers. I think it would be cool to take a look at what other brands are doing that in the future. But first, let's finish off these awards. So now we're moving on to our most concerning retailer of Q3 awards. Susie, what is your most concerning retailer for Q3?
So I'm sad to say the retailer, because there was a time where I really believed in them, and now every week I'm less and less hopeful, and that's Bed Bath & Beyond. I think, I mean, we all know everything that's happening there, so I won't belabor those points. But for me, why I'm most concerned is not only do they have a sort of vacuum, though they did present the interim CEO with the job, they have a vacuum in leadership. And part of that for me is just about they're just zigzagging on their strategies. And instead of staying the course on something and tweaking their strategies to try and implement them in a way that makes more sense for their customer, they're just doing all these back and forths without thinking through the whole, you know, top to bottom process. And so what I mean by that is they're pulling back on private label, whereas we know private label is so important. They're closing stores where we know that stores are, especially for home goods. I mean, you want to have the capability of buy online, pick up in store, or buy in the store, send it to your house. You know, you want to touch and feel the sheets. You want to be part of that process. So I think closing stores is a problem, and they just haven't found the right balance of inventory in terms of stock. There was DataWeave, a retail tracking brand, said that they had over 150,000 items, so more than 40% of the retailer's products in October were out of stock. So closing down stores, pulling back on private label, trends that we know are really important, and they haven't been able to figure out their inventory. So for all those reasons, I'm really worried about them.
So you might say they have a vacuum in leadership, a vacuum in inventory, but no vacuums in inventory. Get it? Because it can mean two things. Okay. Blake, what's our last most concerning retailer for Q3?
I'll talk a little bit about Kohl's, because I think, you know, it really speaks to how these shifts in consumer behavior impacting retailers, both in a positive way like Walmart and a negative way like Kohl's. So you'd think maybe that the narrative could have been that things are getting more expensive, consumers tightening their belts, they're more likely to opt to shop for apparel at a place like Kohl's. However, where we've seen, you know, for a company like Walmart in the grocery category, that type of behavior is happening. That hasn't really happened in apparel, because of the fact that I think the people who are, you know, really tightening their belt are just buying less overall. So a category like apparel is going to suffer, whereas the idea of trading down in the grocery category means something completely different in terms of trading down in the apparel category. So, you know, I'll basically like keep that short and just, I think, overall tie in, you know, how these sort of themes of shifting consumer adoption really, it matters not only the business model level, but category, I think, is a huge factor there. And basically the mirror from Best Buy is that, you know, whereas Best Buy has these, you know, offerings within consumer electronics that are able to service different types of demographics. Kohl's, because of its business model, because of its branding, where it's situated in the marketplace, and because largely its category doesn't seem to really have that flexibility.
Sure. Okay. So people are tightening their belts and buying fewer belts.
Nice.
Thanks.
And ending on a strong note.
All right. That's all we have time for today before I get kicked off of this podcast. Thank you for joining me today, Susie.
Thanks.
Thank you, Blake.
Thanks for having me.
Please give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and cuts out all of my terrible puns. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Telium. And tomorrow you can join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast.